everyone, Josh Neeson, WrestlingObserver.com here. Hopefully you guys are having a great week. Back with another edition of Josh Neeson's Punch-Out on a Saturday. So you know it must be good. I decided to jump into the present after spending so much time in 2017. Wrapping up the Year in Review series earlier this week, and so much going on. And obviously Ronda Rousey making her debut or return to a WWE, return to WWE television this past week, and someone that was in the middle of the coverage of that and kind of the breaking news aspect and exclusive of that was Brett Okamoto of ESPN. He and the team over there, Ramona Shelburne and so on and so forth, some other people on the wrestling side did the basically minutes after the Rousey appearance. All kinds of stories came out, and I was curious about how that whole process came together. So I contacted Brett and got a nice 30-minute conversation here about the news of Rousey and how that happened, some of her prospects going forward, not necessarily in WWE, but actually really kind of just looking back on her career and some of the things that Brett mentioned in a column that he posted that night, as well as whether Brett likes champion versus champion fights, and also a little bit about this weekend show in Brazil and really just kind of this run of shows that we're on, which is every single week, and it's been that way for basically the past 5 months. So talked to Brett a little bit about that. And it's a pretty nice, nice and tidy 30-minute conversation. Perfect for Super Bowl weekend as you're out there getting ready to get your snacks and, get some beers and kind of get the party place going. Take half an hour, listen to this while you prep, and, go Patriots. Talk to you after the interview a little bit more. Enjoy. With the Super Bowl coming up this weekend, we found a great analyst, someone that's going to help us break down the big game, the Patriots and Eagles coming up, the secondary, the offensive line, the play of Tom Brady and all that good stuff. And helping us do that this week, of course, is noted football analyst for ESPN. No, just kidding. He is a top MMA writer for ESPN and one of our good friends on the show, and glad to have him back, the one and only Brett Okamoto. And Brett, we'll start with the real, really, really, really tough questions, even though you're a past guest. What's your prediction for the game this weekend?
I still haven't made up my decision, man. I know I'll probably have some money on it. Living in Vegas over the last 10 years, that's just how it goes. I mean, I'll be watching from a friend's house, and I'm not an Eagles or a Patriots fan, so I need some kind of rooting interest, and that's what's great about living in Vegas. You can throw some money on it. But I haven't made up my mind yet, man. I think I'm leaning Eagles, but I hate betting against the Patriots, so we'll see what happens.
What are your plans for the game? Would you being in Vegas, do you it's a sports book, you do the traditional party, what do you do?
Yeah, over the last it's been like 5 or 6 years. We go to the same guy's house. He's actually an MMA journalist himself. His name's Case Kiefer.
Oh yeah,
he does some MMA work for the local newspaper in Las Vegas, and he also does gambling. So those are basically his beats are gambling and the UFC. So I know him very well. I actually used to work at the Las Vegas Sun, and he likes to get everybody together at his house, and that's probably what we'll be doing.
Very cool. Yeah, he's a very past guest on the show. Very familiar with him. He also writes a lot about music and bands and stuff.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Awesome.
Yeah, huge concert goer. Yep.
Yeah. So let's get into a little bit one we want to talk about, which is not the NFL, of course, or Super Bowl plans. It was this past week. Ronda Rousey, UFC star, going to WWE officially. We kind of knew this was going to happen at some point, but really kind of where I wanted to start was that ESPN was really kind of front and center with this. And just a few minutes after after Rousey walked out, I saw a tweet from you with a linking to a story on ESPN.com from one of your colleagues there. And obviously Ramona Shelburne was doing some work there, and Ariel Helwani pointed out that she was in the front row there. So kind of a tip off in a lot of ways. So you were part of the coverage of this. So kind of, I want to ask, like, how did this, from your perspective, and obviously you were a contributor to this, how did this first come together? When were you aware of it? And obviously you wrote a column and everything for it. And kind of how things come together from your perspective?
Well, I guess the easiest way to say it from my perspective is it was no secret that, Ronda had been in contact with the WWE. And there were actually a few a few separate occasions that I thought that this was going to happen, you know, going back several months ago. And, you know, it kind of seemed like it was inevitable. And you know, ESPN launched a full page dedicated to WWE coverage in 2017. The editor there does a great job. He's you know, he's got good contacts with the WWE, and then of course Ramona is very close to Ronda still, having done breakout feature stories for ESPN The Mag over the last several years. So, you know, it was one of those situations where, just based on those relationships that ESPN has with WWE and with Ronda and with the UFC, we caught wind of it, and we were able to work with her. And obviously, I'm sure you saw that the videos came out pretty quickly of an interview that Ronda had done with Ramona prior to walking out to WWE. So it was a well collaborated, you know, rollout of coverage, I thought. And then of course, you know, my involvement in it was from the MMA angle. And I wrote what my opinion is of Rousey going to the WWE. And yeah, I thought it was, I thought we covered it well.
Yeah. And it was, well, what's really kind of telling, and I guess really where kind of the journalism industry is that, you know, in the past, someone gets this info and they're like, we got to run with this right away. And as you mentioned, people had kind of known about this for a while. It was kind of a pretty poorly kept secret in a lot of ways. And people kind of knew that this was going to happen. But it was really well timed in a lot of ways, with, you know, just minutes after she walks out there, all of a sudden this, you know, bevy of coverage kind of comes out, and then the hour after this with the interviews and all that stuff. And yeah, it was kind of, from a journalistic sense, it was really interesting in that most news you run with it, you run with it. Some outlets do it the other way around. And then you kind of go from there. But you guys really kind of timed this out and came from it with from a few different angles.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, that's sort of journalism, where it's at, you know, currently. I mean, I guess the way I look at that, and I consider myself, you know, a real sort of old school journalist, you know, what I was taught in school and sort of the standards that you are supposed to uphold is, you know, you don't really necessarily time out your coverage with, you know, that of what a promoter wants or an athlete wants, or et cetera, et cetera. But unfortunately, man, I mean, that's not just how it works out in the real world. And I think sometimes, you know, when journalists catch wind of something and then they try to confirm it, and then there's, you know, conversation of, well, we have something special planned, especially when you're talking about something like WWE, you know, where they want a big splash and they want to surprise their fans. And they have, I mean, that's essentially their whole business model is, you know, those surprises during those big shows. And, you know, the storylines that go along with that. So I think this was one of those situations where, you know, again, Ramona's relationship with Ronda, it was just one of those stories where, you know, we were onto it, and we chose to, I guess, work along with the WWE for a deal that made sense for everybody, you know, in terms of the coverage. And sometimes that's just how it plays out, you know, in the current journalistic climate.
Yeah, it's interesting being on this side of it with a website that obviously covers both pro wrestling with Dave Meltzer, and then, you know, we cover MMA, but obviously not to that extent. And, you know, Dave is obviously a newsbreaker and insider in his own way, and gets a lot of details and all that. And, you know, some stuff he'll talk about months and months ahead of time, and then all of a sudden the event happens and people kind of forget that months and months ago we already broke it. And when ESPN came on board, it's interesting because you have people that, you know, from ESPN's own, I don't know if it's public editor or deputy editor, I remember reading a couple of months ago, like, he had some issues with how WWE was covered by the network and by ESPN in general. And then there was, you know, people are like, well, why are they more newsy with it? And then there's people that kind of understand the game. It's a really complicated relationship and really unique, and so much different than, say, like, you know, the UFC, where, you know, again, news happens, and you've been doing an awesome job as always, kind of breaking some news and putting out interesting news about fights and announcements and all this stuff as well. It is so much different because it's not a typical sport. It's a, you know, entertainment part of it, but it's just, yeah, it's a really kind of complicated relationship from a lot of different ways.
Yeah, I can only imagine. I mean, like I said, with the just the nature of professional wrestling, I'm sure you run into that all the time. And I don't know if I could do that. You know, I don't know if I could be a professional journalist trying to cover pro wrestling, just because those two needs conflict with one another so well. So I got to see that, you know, obviously with this one. And again, you know, I think ESPN handled it well. And you know, as much as we have a journalistic need to report the news, I mean, at the same time, like, ruining potentially, I guess, you know, Ronda showing up, I don't know. I mean, luckily that wasn't a decision I had to make, but I can understand, you know, why it went the way it did with that particular case.
Yeah. I want to go to your column, which I really enjoyed, and for people can check it out. Obviously, Brett Okamoto, Ronda Rousey, you can put that in Google and find it pretty easily. So a couple lines in this to kind of go on, obviously, in the MMA side of things. You wrote, even when she came back for a final unsuccessful fight in 2016, she seemed angry at the sport in general, as if it had betrayed her in some way. You kind of go down a little bit, and that scorn was allegedly directed at anybody and everybody, kind of going off the FTA mantra. But of course, the MMA world felt it most, because that was a world from which Rousey originated. It has been a strange way for such a historic career to end. One minute, women's MMA was Rousey's torch to carry, and the next, it was a stranger to her. And I really, I kind of took from that, like, she was and still seems to be, and I got this from the Ramona interviews as well, there's still something with her in MMA that just... she just seems very unsettled with it and almost has, you know, kind of turned her back on it and this whole world. And, you know, this group that really embraced her is this interesting phenomenon that just came in and just took over for years, and just a breath of fresh air in a lot of ways, changed everything. And then just for her to kind of switch so quickly away, it's just really, really fascinating how things have gone down with her and now this latest switch. So as you know, as you kind of learned this news, as you're writing this column, what was going through your head?
Yeah, I just said, I mean, you know, basically what you just outlined and what I outlined in the story is that it's just been so strange. And initially it was confusing, and it was, you know, potentially frustrating for a lot of people, but I think my overall point now is that it's really been 2 years. I mean, I know she came back and fought Amanda Nunes, but she refused to talk to, you know, any MMA media, and, you know, she didn't show up at any of these, you know, real public things. I mean, the walkout that she had, or the stare down that she had with Amanda Nunes in New York, right around UFC 205, you know, Dana White really had to call in basically a favor, you know, and say, you know, look, if you're going to come back and you're going to do this, That's great. You know, we want you back. We want you to fight Amanda Nunes. And if you don't want to do media, you know, I can probably make that happen, but can you show up to New York and just stare her down, you know? And even I mean, Rousey always had the snarl, you know, and that look on her face with her opponent, but just her demeanor, even like when I saw her in the back in New York, you know, just being around the UFC environment again, she just seemed very agitated and not necessarily comfortable. And I think, again, initially when that happened, it was confusing and it was frustrating for a lot of people. But I think now it's been 2 years, you know, that we've sort of seen this behavior, and it's like, we can kind of, understand it now. You know, we may not agree with it, or it may still confuse us to a certain extent, but it just is who she is. And so I'm kind of over that part of it now. You know, I mean, this is how she's chosen to walk away from the sport, apparently. And what my observation is just that that's unfortunate, you know, and that I hope that changes someday. Like, I'm not mad at Rousey. I don't think that she owes anything to the sport. I mean, if you want to talk about her being a sore loser or the holes in her game, I mean, we can have those types of conversations. But my overall point, you know, at this time, as she moves away from the sport and goes into WWE, is that I hope that she is able to come to some sort of terms in her own mind that allows her to come back and enjoy the sport a little bit. And I still think she can contribute to it, really. I mean, that's another point of it is, you know, why can't she talk about the Joanna Jung Jacek's of the world and the Rose Namajunas? And, you know, when Holly Holm is fighting Chris Cyborg, why can't she put up some sort of tweet? You know, Gina Carano does that. She's done that for years. And if Rousey doesn't want to do that, then that's fine. I'm not saying that she has an obligation to do it. I'm just, for as much as she meant to the sport and how much of a pioneer that she was, for her to just, you know, walk away cold turkey is just, I think it's unfortunate for everybody, particularly for her. You know, I'd like to see her get to a spot where she can come back and genuinely enjoy, you know, being celebrated for what she did in the sport, and not, you know, have this sense of shame that seems like she carries around with it.
Yeah, one thing I noticed from Sunday was that she was, you know, she was smiling, you know, and people in the wrestling industry are kind of like, well, you know, she's got to play a character and got to come out a little bit more gruff and what have you. And I think there'll be time for that. And I kind of felt that too. But I guess since she seemed genuinely happy and excited to get that opportunity and this challenge that was going to be in front of her. Now, months from now, you know, who knows? All of a sudden, you know how fans are. They can turn on anyone in a second. But she seemed like she was full of joy. And it seems like for so long for MMA, especially this last, you know, a couple of years or whatever, not even a couple of years, but last year plus, it seems, and especially during that last fight and the buildup you were just mentioning, that there wasn't a lot of joy there. It was just kind of going through the motions, being forced to do it. So I think if she has some sort of peace with this, that's great. But yeah, I mean, to your point, I think that she still has a lot to contribute, but maybe just not in the cage, or maybe some other way she can do that. Maybe, you know, 5 years and 5-7 years from now, whenever maybe she's done wrestling, however long this lasts, maybe she figures that out, that point of her life. But it's been fascinating way to see her kind of go out on in the sport and really just no idea. You know, I can't even want to ask questions. Do you think she'll ever fight again? Because I don't know. Her answer was really interesting with that, with when Ramona asked her, like, she said, well, I never really retired from judo either. I don't get the sense that she's really ever going to come back. And to me, I guess I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, you can say that you never retired from something, but you still can be, you know? Yeah. I mean, I've never officially announced my retirement from certain things that I used to do in my life either. But if you're just never going to do them again, then you are essentially effectively retired from it. And you know, the thing about Rousey is that if she ever wants to fight again, of course she will, because the opportunity will be right there. I mean, it takes one phone call to say, you know, hey, I have interest in coming back, and immediately, bam, it's going to happen. But, you know, I don't ever see that happening, you know, and something that did come out over the last 2 years, a little bit more so than, you know, we knew about when she was fighting is, but she does have these lingering injuries, you know, that her body has been through a lot through the judo career and then through the MMA career as well. And I don't think, you know, as years go on, and then I know she has, you know, she's spoken about a desire to have kids of her own. I don't see Ronda Rousey coming back and taking a fight. And I really don't think she needs to or should, quite frankly.
Yeah. Let's go to kind of jump around the MMA world a little bit, because we are in a let me ask you this. We're in this stretch, we go back to like September and through the first week of March, I believe, where I think there's basically, by the math, there's a show almost every single weekend. There were 16 shows from September through the end of December. We're at a pretty pretty torrid pace right now. We're going to Brazil coming up in a day or so. And coming off, obviously, Boston a few weeks ago, and just there's no end in sight when it comes to just kind of just trying to keep up with the, you know, the amount of fighters, the stories, all that stuff. How are you managing this absolutely crazy stretch?
Man, I mean, well, to be honest, you know, it's difficult. It is difficult to dedicate the amount of time that you want to give to some of these guys. You know, I mean, the schedule can just feel like it's overwhelming at times, where you can't look, you know, further than what's right in front of your face. And I think that affects, you know, me as a journalist at ESPN, but I think it affects, you know, every MMA outlet to a certain extent. And I think it affects the UFC as well. You know, I mean, they have a great story this weekend with Eric Anders, the former Alabama linebacker, you know, flying down to Brazil and fighting Lyoto Machida. Anders told me a great story that the first time he ever saw Lyoto Machida was at UFC 98. He wasn't in attendance, but he watched the pay-per-view when Machida won his title against Rashad Evans. And it was the first time he'd ever seen him. And when he saw just the highlight package, he told his roommate, like, yeah, that's the guy. He's going to win tonight. And they bet money on him. So Lyoto Machida actually won Eric Anders some money when he was, you know, in college in 2009, still an active collegiate football player. And now, you know, 9 years later, which is a significant amount of time, but you know, it's also not forever. Now he's fighting him in the main event. I mean, that's a great story, and it doesn't really feel like the UFC has given Anders a great opportunity to tell it. They're putting him in this position in a main event, which is, you know, a nice promotional lift in and of itself, but you know, they can't really just buckle down and give this guy a huge spotlight, because they're coming off of a weekend where they just had a fight, and and they're going to be heading into it next weekend where they're having a fight over in Australia. So it can, I mean, I'm not one of those guys who really thinks that the UFC necessarily needs to eliminate a ton of their shows. I know that there's an argument for that, but this is a negative aspect of it. It's just that, you know, these guys get lost in the shuffle a little bit.
Yeah. And you mentioned Anders, and you have a story about him on ESPN.com right now. And I mean, this is someone that had gone from, you know, someone we saw in the early FS1 prelims and kind of just got to know him a little bit, because he looks the part. He has that, for those that are into other sports, yeah, the football background and all that stuff. It's one of those things kind of like, all right, who's this guy? And he had a couple of impressive performances. He calls out Lyoto Machida, and it's kind of one of those things like, all right, yeah, we'll you know, sometimes guys kind of, I want to say jump the line, but call out a name, and you're like, I don't know if that fight's going to happen. And all of a sudden, it seemed like within a couple weeks, that fight was already booked, and not just booked, in a main event. And I think that's kind of where, I guess, where the UFC is at right now. And you look at some of the, you know, this Jeremy Stephens and Josh Emmett fight coming up. Emmett obviously coming in short notice on that fight a few weeks ago. Missed weight, still knocked out Ricardo Lamas, and now gets a main event spot against Jeremy Stephens coming up. And Stephens just fought Duho Choi in a main event. It's just, they're kind of just like, it almost feels like, who do we have available and who can give us something? And you know, we'll just kind of almost like book by the seat of our pants just because we have so many shows we have to book. It's a insane stretch, crazy stuff.
Yeah. And I think it does kind of create a situation in which, you know, you're constantly looking for people who can maybe break through a little bit and pick up, you know, a substantial fan base and run with it. And the way in which they kind of seem to be doing that is, you know, obviously that is someone who pops on the prelims, you know, and then if they call out a name, there's a buzz there, and then you create that main event. But, you know, this weekend is probably a great example of this, is that, you know, not a lot of people know about Anders yet, right? Because he has been on the prelims. And so now you get in a situation where you're trying to sell him in a spot, like this is his opportunity. And, you know, sometimes, quite frankly, it's like a little bit too much too fast for these guys. You know, the UFC identifies someone who has some potential, and they have all of these needs for main events and co-main events, so they'll throw him in there right away. And then if Anders is unsuccessful, then it's almost like sort of kills the buzz, I think, a little bit for him.
Yeah.
And, you know, so maybe is that the most strategic way to bring up these guys and put them in the best chances to succeed? You know, you've got a guy who I think has some selling power, and Eric Anders, you know, maybe not, I'm not saying he's the UFC's next pay-per-view draw, but he's a guy that they could promote well. And he's flying down to Brazil, fighting internationally against a guy with vastly more experience than him. If he goes out and knocks out Lyoto Machida in the first round, great. But if he doesn't, you know, you're asking a lot of this guy sometimes. You know, and you're almost kind of killing the buzz before it even starts. But it's tough. I mean, that's fight promotion. It is just tough to make these guys stand out. And the UFC tries to put them in these positions. And if they win, then great. Then they get that buzz going. And sometimes it's a little bit too much too soon for them.
Final questions here. Champion versus champion. This seems to be the theme potentially of 2018. We already have Cormier versus Miocic booked just a couple weeks after we're in Boston for that fun night. And it looks like this is not going to be the end of it, and potentially could be all in one night coming up in July. We heard some stories and rumors about that, and could be more of this coming up. What's a thumbs up, thumbs down on, or thumbs in the middle on champion versus champion fights in the UFC?
The three that are being talked about, I'm thumbs up on. And I mean, in general, I'm not. You know, if you're letting your champions just run around and not defend their titles, and bounce around between different weight classes, then, you know, that's going to cripple sort of what keeps this sport going. And that is that the titles mean something. And so that the guys and gals who are trying to get there, it just makes everything, I think, a little bit more interesting when, you know, there's continuity. There's something that these guys are striving for, you know, and if you sort of take that away and now it's all just about the individual itself and it's not really about, you know, being the best, then I think the whole sport may tend to suffer from that. I mean, I think boxing could attest to that. But in this case, man, I think it's okay because I just don't see this big time number one contender that is being lost in the shuffle on all of this. You know, Demetrius Johnson has cleaned out his division. I'm interested in a Henry Cejudo rematch, but not so much so that I don't want to see TJ Dillashaw drop down and fight him. You know, even at bantamweight, you know, Dillashaw is a former champion, and then he beat a couple guys to get back to the championship. He's fought a lot of those guys up at the top. You know, he just fought Cody Garbrandt. Dominic Cruz is injured. No one wants to see a Rafael Sunsal trilogy. So I'm totally fine with that one. I think it's one of the best fights the UFC can put together right now. Stipe, DC, really similar deal. You know, Alexander Gustafsson gets a short end of the stick, but I don't need to see a Gustafsson-DC rematch so badly that it would prevent between a DC and a Stipe, who was also looking at a bunch of rematches. And then, I mean, Chris Cyborg is in a perpetually empty division, so we don't really need to talk about what number one contender there is for her, because the division doesn't even exist below her. And Nunes, I mean, who is the big name at 135 pounds that Nunes needs to fight? There's not one there. So I can see the concerns that people have, and could this end up holding up some of the divisions? You know, it could. We'll have to see how it plays out, what the results of the fight are, you know, how quickly all of these champions want to turn back around. But I'm okay with it, man. The UFC needs a big event in the summer. They need to make a splash. I don't think just DC Stipe would necessarily do it. I think if you do all three on that card, which is possible, I think that does make a big splash, and I think that would actually be a positive, a healthy thing for the sport this summer.
I would agree. I've come around to it a lot with that line of thinking, and just looking at some of these divisions, and you really, other than I would have loved to see, I really do want to see Cormier Gustafsson too at some point, but I kind of get that, especially with heavyweight not really being a lot there for rematches. I think the one thing that this puts on the UFC matchmakers this year is to really, this is their time to build up contenders. Like, if they have, this is going to hold up some divisions. I mean, they got months and months and months to try to make some things happen and to build some guys up and hopefully, and girls, and hopefully, you know, hopefully we get a run, and at this point for the second half of the year, we start to get some obvious number one contenders and people that we really want to see take on the champion. I'll give you one more fourth potential champion versus champion fight that no one's really talking about for good reason. I think if Joanna Jędrzejczyk beats Rose Namajunas, I think they're going to put her against Nico Montano at some point to try to do a fourth champion versus champion fight. That's my big prediction for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see that. And I could be honest, I don't have a whole lot of opinions on the female 125-pound weight class right now, just because I think it is so young that it's almost, you know, I mean, I think that they just this is nothing against Nico Montano, but I think that they just crowned a champion there because they wanted a champion on top of it. But really, that division is just, it's unestablished. It's wide open. You know, it's an infant right now. So you won't hear me talking a whole lot about 125 because I don't put a whole lot of stock in those rankings just yet. I think they need to settle themselves out, you know?
You can follow him on Twitter, Biokimoto ESPN. He hosts the Five Rounds podcast on ESPN. There's a lot of written stuff up there as well. The feature on Eric Anders we were just talking about, as well as all kind of other stuff as well. Anything else to plug, Brett? What did I miss?
Yeah, no, I think that's it, man. I appreciate the plug for the podcast. We've been doing that for a while. Have fun doing that. And other than that, ESPN.com, that's where you'll see all my work. And at Biokimoto ESPN, if you want to speak to me directly. I mean, I always talk back to people who hit me up on there.
Good stuff. Brett Okamoto, thanks so much for spending some time with us today.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. Anytime.
All right. Big thanks to Brett Okamoto for stopping by. Follow him on Twitter. Check out the story on Eric Anders he did, as well as the Rousey column and Five Rounds podcast and all that good stuff as well. Glad I was able to get him for a little bit. Wish I had a little bit more time, because I did want to bring up one thing with Rousey, and I guess we'll kind of just discuss it here, or thought I had. I think her upbringing really screwed her up, and I know she was a judo champion, and during her rise, it was kind of this tough upbringing by Dr. Anna Marie, Dr. Anne Marie, right? It was just kind of like one of those things she would laugh it off and so on. I really think that did a number on her, and probably in ways that we'll never truly know until, she has ever getting the therapy or something like that. But I don't know. There's just, to me, there's something there in that when she used to talk about how, she was just so tough on her to be a better competitor. And, she would try to submit her at all times a day. And I'm sure a little bit that's hyperbole. But there's something there. I think it may have just fractured her for life and how she's dealing with losses and just how she's just is not able to get past this. And you think of all these superstar athletes and teams and coaches, the tough losses always stay with them. This week, the Patriots in being the Super Bowl, the Giants losses get brought up. And you always hear champions and not even necessarily even champions, but athletes who have been on the tough side of history, even the ones that have won, have always talked about how the losses stand out way more than the big wins. And you kind of think of it from this, from our perspective, the commoner's perspective, so to speak, and how we think of, like, you know, well, you're a champion, you won the big one, you won several championships. What do you get to be upset about? You know, sure, you can get over those things. And there's just something there, this consistency, and you don't really get over them. But there's still, you can tell that in a way you have to get over them because you have to move on because there's another game, there's another season, there's another fight, whatever. But Rousey has not been able to do that. And in that interview, that quick clip, if you haven't seen it, that with Ramona Shelburne, where she just still can't address the losses. And it's just, it's strange. And you kind of wonder where that stems from, because there's nothing you really see with other classic competitors. Like, you always hear about Michael Jordan and Tom Brady and these guys, that they're still able to talk about it in a way that makes you realize that the part of them is never over it, but part of them is, because they have to get past it. And she still hasn't got past it yet. And I find that very odd. So I'm just kind of wondering what that stems from. And in my opinion, I think it's something to do with the upbringing, but who knows? I'm not a licensed psychiatrist by any means, but there's, I don't know, there's just something there. Anyway, so we have this weekend coming up, Eric Anders, kind of looking to keep on that that role against Lyoto Machida. Could be too early in his career. Machida, however, did not look good in his first outing back. He's getting in there quickly, and you're seeing a lot of these guys in these quick turnarounds. I talked a little bit about it with Brett. It's pretty crazy. I don't think it's the best thing, and again, just from a selfish perspective, with all these shows every single week, you definitely tend to lose some things. But another aspect is, you wonder if it's good for these guys' bodies and their minds, and especially with, you know, the concussion stuff and all that. Is it good to have them coming back so quick? You saw Michael Bisping is not going to be fighting in London after all, and you wonder if some of that is physical, and, you know, him coming back so quickly after the GSP loss and getting brutally knocked out and wanting to fight in this London show, that a lot of people are like, oh boy, that's even that's another quick turnaround. So you just kind of wonder. So just something to kind of keep in mind as we go forward in the future here. But yeah, so we have that fight coming up this weekend. A couple of interesting fights as well. However, the co-main event, we had Pedro Munhoz, John Dodson fell through. Munhoz couldn't make weight, or couldn't make the bantamweight limit. And Dodson, it was going to be, I guess, such an egregious difference. They offered him the fight. He turned it down. And fortunately, he didn't even get any money, not even show money or anything like that, which is, it really sucks. You know, he did everything he had to do, made weight, everything. And he got, as of this point, which is Friday night at around 11 o'clock Eastern, has not got a dime. And that is just, it's sad. It is absolutely sad. This is supposed to be a major league sport, and these guys are treated like minor leaguers, which is embarrassing. Let's see, what else? Just finished up Glow, finally. I know that show came out months and months and months ago, but I finally was able to finish it up, and I actually watched the Glow documentary on Netflix that ran tonight. I, for some reason, did not know that Ivory was a Glow wrestler, so it was kind of cool to learn that tonight. I'm sure a lot of you are like, duh, of course, but yeah, she's part of that. The TV show is great. For some reason, you guys have not seen it, and you're kind of like on the fence. It was very entertaining for even those that are not wrestling fans. I think they would like it. And my wife did not get into it because she is adamantly not a wrestling fan, and just could not, didn't even want to try. So I get to watch this one by myself. But it was really good, very fun, and nice. 10 episodes, 30 minutes an episode, give or take. That's a quick in and out. That's a few days watching. So definitely check that out. And the documentary is just under an hour and a half, so I definitely recommend that as well. That's more if you're a wrestling fan. If you haven't seen that, it's well worth watching. Get interesting stuff. And I kept thinking of Mike Sempervivi watching the documentary, and I have no idea why. Maybe you guys can fill me in on why that might be. He was just in my head the entire time watching that. So I don't know. Maybe he was a huge Glow fan, and maybe I saw that on Twitter like months and months ago or something. But that stuck with me. Let's see. I think that's about it. So big thanks to Brett Okamoto. God, I can't even talk. Big thanks to Brett Okamoto. We'll try that again. And thanks to all you guys for listening. A lot of choices in your podcast day. Appreciate you spending some time with me, us, and the website. This has been Josh Nason's Punch Out, and until next time, insert catchphrase here. Go Patriots!